I'm going to hit the runway running, so to speak, after reprising next week the High Command radio broadcast from 1944 that we heard in the third installment of this program. We're literally going to integrate the material that you've been hearing for these last 3 months directly into the headlines and the stories that are breaking all around us here on October 11th, 1992, which for the benefit of people who hear this on tape, that is today's date. This evening, we're going to be focusing on the implications of the events and the processes that I have been discussing for the last 3 months for the United States. And again, next week, I will be effecting what I hope will be a completely smooth transition directly into the headlines and the news stories that are breaking all around us. Rather than give a summary of the entire program, I think what I'm going to do this evening is try something a little bit different. I'm going to give a summary of each of three major sections of tonight's program. Obviously, they are all related to each other. They all are germane to each other. But I thought rather than sit here and hold forth about the entire broadcast, and bear in mind that I will be going up to midnight tonight, so those of you who are taping, get ready to go for 5 hours or so this evening. I thought I'd give a summary of each section of the program. Now, in the first section, we're going to discuss, basically, the events that I have and the processes I've outlined for the last 12 weeks. I'm going to put a cap on the discussion of how the United States and its national security establishment were basically used by the Germans and the Japanese, more the Germans and Japanese, but both, basically how the U.S. national security establishment and the U.S. political establishment ultimately served the purposes of the Third Reich, and as we have seen, the map of Eastern Europe has been redrawn precisely along the lines that Alfred Rosenberg of Hitler's Ostministerium would have liked, and it was the activities of the United States, and specifically the effect of the Galen Organization, the Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit on the U.S. that helped to bring that about. We're going to recap that, and as we have seen in the past month, the Galen Organization, which I have termed, and we'll touch back on that this evening, a Trojan horse inside of the United States, it was functioning as the intelligence service and as an extension of a rejuvenated Reich. One of the great political myths of the late 20th century is that Nazism disappeared and the Third Reich disappeared. It did not. Some of its most prominent and visible individuals were dispatched or went underground, but the Reich basically was reinstituted, and the Cold War and the fear of communism on the part of the other Western nations had a great deal to do with that. I realize, in particular, for the people who are hearing this program for the first time or who have missed many of the other broadcasts, that will seem absolutely cockeyed to you. As the American dupe, the naive Dummkopf in the radio play High Command from 1944 put it, "Oh, that's Buck Rogers stuff." You'll get a chance to hear that genius at work again next week. But unfortunately, it is not Buck Rogers stuff. One of the rather difficult aspects of intellectual culture is that intellectual culture is in and of itself basically reactionary. New truths or valid truths have a very difficult time being accepted by those who are not familiar with them, and that goes for the intellectual establishment as well. But we're going to discuss basically how the rejuvenated Reich was able to use the United States for its own devices, and beyond that, this by way of capping what we've been looking at for the past month or so, we're going to take a look at a statement by a fellow named Sonnenall, who was the information officer for the Marshall Plan in Germany, and his view as of 1950 that Germany would benefit from not permitting the United States and the Soviet Union to ever achieve a rapprochement. At some point, we can't say when, but at some point, it's a safe bet that that became a formula, and it became a policy of this rejuvenated Reich to see to it that there was no resolution to the Cold War until the program of Befreiung or liberation was achieved. Exactly when that happened, we can't say, but I suspect that the dissolution of the Soviet Union as a result of the pressure of the arms race and the consequent bankrupting of the U.S. as a result of that same arms race, at some point, probably relatively early on, became an established policy of this rejuvenated Reich. Following that, We're going to take a look again at a couple of very brief sections from an essay by Carl Oglesby in Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35, specifically taking a look at the Galen Organization as a Trojan horse. Yes, that's what we're going to do. Following that, we're going to hear, and by the way, Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35 was the issue of the fall of 1990. Following that, we're going to hear a section from Radio Free America program number 35, this from more than a year and a half earlier, specifically from January 15th, 1989, again more than a year and a half before Oglesby's article was published, in which I outlined my opinion and my viewpoint that the United States had in fact lost the Second World War, and that one of the main reasons for this was that the Galen Organization had indeed served as a Trojan horse. Following that, we're going to begin focusing on the implications of the events and processes that I've been discussing for the United States. And specifically, we're going to take a look at the political conquest of the United States and its political system by the political system of Germany and the fascist powers of Europe. We are well along the road now toward having a fascist society, and we're going to take a look at the events that have led up to this and caused it. We're going to begin by going back to the negotiations being effected by Alan Dulles and key members of the Third Reich during the course of the Second World War. This specifically will come from Charles Higham's book, American Swastika. And we're going to take a look at Alan Dulles and people like Max Egan von Hohenlohe and others who were negotiating the, quote, Christian West concept, unquote. That was a Third Reich survival strategy, a strategy to survive military defeat. It became the seed concept for NATO. Well, now what we're going to begin doing this evening is we're going to take a look at the implications and the effects of the things we've been talking about on the U.S. per se. We have been focused mostly on Europe, although many of the processes that affected Europe came from the United States, but we're going to be taking a look at the U.S. this evening. Following that, we're going to take a look at the negotiations being conducted by Alan Dulles and SS General Karl Wolff to surrender the SS forces in Italy. And we're going to come across an old name, an individual that we took a look at in connection with the Nazi Party in exile in Madrid. Again, that will sound absolutely crazy to many people. What, a Nazi Party in exile in Madrid? That's precisely why I have been going through this material in the admittedly very pedantic format that I have been using, because without hearing it from the documentary sources, it will, of course, seem fanciful. But we're going to take a look at Jürgen Dollmann, one of the individuals who was serving as a liaison between Alan Dulles and SS General Karl Wolff. Recall that we looked at him earlier in his function as a courier and a representative of the Nazi Party in exile. He was arrested in Germany, got a wrist slap, and we're going to take a look at old Jürgen Dollmann and his work with Alan Dulles and SS General Karl Wolff, this by way of beginning to swing back to the United States. After that, we're going to take up an item that is somewhat speculative in nature. Certainly it raises many more questions than it answers, but we're going to take a look at, once again, the book The Nazis Go Underground from 1944 by Kurt Rees, and specifically we're going to take a look at one of the major stratagems being planned by the Third Reich for surviving military defeat, namely a proposal, a contingency plan to hook up with reactionary Christian fundamentalists in the United States as a means of reviving fascism and perpetuating the Reich. Because even in 1944, the Third Reich was looking to an alliance with reactionary fundamentalist Christians in the United States as a means of rejuvenating the Reich and perpetuating fascism. And specifically, one of the individuals that they were looking to was a prominent American fascist named the Reverend Gerald L.K. Smith. L.K. Smith's activities have given rise to many, many things that are familiar to students of fascist politics and reactionary politics in the United States. Among the things that have sprung from the activities, sprung from the seeds sown by Gerald L.K. Smith, are the contemporary Aryan Nations up in Hayden Lake, Idaho. And Gerald L.K. Smith worked very closely with, among others, H.L. Hunt, the scion of the Hunt oil family. And recall that we took a look at Nelson Bunker Hunt and the Hunt operations, and we took a look at Nelson Bunker Hunt and his position in the International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, a German-based intelligence network, and that involves such people as Theodor Oberländer, Charles Willoughby, and many of the individuals who have figured in our discussion to date. Again, I think perhaps the Christian West concept, the International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, can be seen in a different light as we examine the Third Reich's contingency plans to hook up with reactionary fundamentalists in the United States. After that, we're going to take a look at the Free Congress Foundation of Paul Weyrich once again, and we're going to take a look at the nature of the Free Congress Foundation, its intersection with the Christian extreme right, and its significant involvement with domestic American fascist forces. We've taken a look at the connections between the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the Free Congress Foundation, the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations having been formed by Adolf Hitler in 1943. We're going to take a look at the domestic fascist connections of the Free Congress Foundation. After that, we're going to take a look at something. We're going to review an item that we looked at in a Radio Free America program number 3 dealing with the Galen Organization, namely what Reinhard Galen, the Nazi Eastern Front spy chief for World War II and a prime functionary of U.S. and NATO intelligence after the war, what did he do after his formal retirement from the BND, the West German Intelligence Service, the final incarnation of his organization? Well, he became an evangelist. Again, this particular section of the program will raise more questions than it answers, but it certainly raises some interesting questions, and I think much of the integrity of our political system and perhaps our own physical survival will rest on a successful resolution successful answering of these questions. After that, the last section of this program, this section of the program that we're going to look at, concerns a remarkable column, an op-ed column that appeared in the San Francisco Examiner on Friday, September 18th of 1992. This is by a lifelong Republican and a person who comes from a long Republican lineage named Clifford E. Anderson. And he's going to talk about his observations concerning the Republican Party's affiliations with the extreme Christian right. It has led him to change his party affiliation, and he points out that the values now being expressed by the Republican Party are not those of conservatism, but they are those of religious fanaticism and fascism. And that's his word, folks, not mine. You've heard me use the word. Now you're going to hear him use the word. So that's what we have on tap in the first section of tonight's program. We're going to take a musical break, and then we're going to come back with the first section of tonight, so what, for all intents and purposes, will be the last installment of Radio Free America number 37. Next week, as I indicated, we're going to be effecting a smooth transition right into the stories that are breaking today. Have some great new translations from Dave White, our pan-European translator, and we will hit the deck running next week for sure, and in effect, what I hope will be a completely smooth integration into the stories breaking around us in the news these days. So that's what we have on tap. We're going to take a musical break, and then we're going to come back with the first section of tonight's installment of Radio Free America 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War.